This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard. Not billiard. What? Not the billiards. It was... Come on, Rudy. What? Come on. We call it the
place to
be. The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
This is the place to be here tonight.
Time to play the game.
Party people in the place to be. Uh-huh. It's about that time.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Actually, it's being John Akiyama is a better version of it.
What do you think, Woodling? You can finally tell Grant Owens you found new music.
I'll tell you what, I am impressed.
Sharon Lawson Bram, skid of a rinky dinky dink.
Yeah.
Skid of a rinky doo.
Hey, Nate, man, this is pretty much a highlight of my life right now. I had no idea you were going to be here. I wanted to drive that freaking ho train of my whole youth. You're the man.
And I thought he meant Nate Milton, the Godfather from Kings of Sport. Do you really think that's the Godfather?
Yeah, I did.
All you have to do is break out that fuck money.
I ate the pot. Watch your mouth, you scraggly Canadian.
That's a bit much. You, who murdered the dog with the sword, and I'm being a little too much.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. 5 years! 5 years! We've been doing podcasts. And we have this. This is trash.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening, as we usually are. And of course, as I usually am, alongside my PIC, Mr. Scott Criscola. Scotland, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 454 of the Gold Standard. And we're back in the offices this evening after a little jaunt up to your backyard. We were in Providence last week, back to the offices in Midtown, which means, JR, we are not alone this evening as the third of the Gold Dust Trio has returned.
I picture his face as, like, appearing in the darkness as he joins us in the booth. And that is, of course, the man from Vancouver himself, Mr. Kelly Nelson. Kelly, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys.
Good to hear.
Back,
good
sir.
To hear. And, you know, Scott, 454, so it's been quite a run. I had to correct one of my other podcast partners, Alan, had the balls on Letters from Center Stage to ask if Between the Sheets episode 100 was the longest running episodic podcast on Place to Be Nation. And I quickly took him to the woodshed and said, we have done 354 more than them, sir. And, you know, even hours-wise, I know they do long shows, but you know what? Me and you, we were cranking out like 5 hours of content a week in those early years. We were doing like two and a half hour shows. So,
yeah, we did.
We're still the kings. So you got to take a swing at us. You got to make it count, Alan.
And we were reading, you know, Nielsen ratings and autopsy reports.
I'm not going to question the content. But yes, I mean, the hours that we've logged is up there. So anyway, and I'll put that against anyone. But yes, here we are.
Absolutely.
Of course. And speaking of Between the Sheets and other shows, I do want to just quickly highlight the different feed options here at PlaceToBeNation.com. I know there are, some confusion sometimes, but we do have three of them. We have the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which is where we are right now, Scott. We have the pro wrestling only feed, which, you know, still features, like we said, Letters from Center Stage, has the archives of Titans of Wrestling and where the big boys play. Some of the newer shows like This Week in Wrestling and the Greetings from Allentown and some other great shows as well there. And then we have Place to Be Nation Pop, which features all of our comics and sports podcasts and other entertainment ventures. So those are the three feeds. If you just went to iTunes right now and did Place to Be Nation Wrestling, Place to Be Nation Pop, and Pro Wrestling Only and subscribed, you will get every show we do, every podcast and every pod blast going on right now, which, of course, kind of becoming our thing here at PlaceToBeNation.com. So I just wanted to kind of get that out there and you know, clear things up as to where all the feeds lie. And all that's at PlaceToBeNation.com as well. But just, you know, if you're looking to subscribe and making sure you're hearing all of our shows, both podcasts and Podblast form, you can subscribe to those feeds and you'll catch everything. So just wanted to get that out there. And now I think we can dive into our show properly.
Indeed, JR. As I mentioned to you, Mr. Nelson, we were in New England last week in your backyard of Providence. Back in the offices, sir. Kelly, your desk is desk down the hall in the littler office is all set up, ready to go. You have your little Dave Steeb bobblehead, which George, by the way, I have a little Dave Steeb action for you during the Pop Culture Report tonight. And guess what? You're not going to like it.
How about a Jose Bautista bobblehead with a needle just right in the arm, just hanging out?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Little George Bell, a little extra cork.
And you kind of got the guy spying on the signals from the center field on the other side of the room, just kind of tipping off the bobbleheads of what kind of pitch is coming.
But you do have your framed Mike Vernon jersey, so that's all you need to know there. Anyway, yeah. All right. As we're joking around here, we are, of course, back at Madison Square Garden. So let's get into our show, gentlemen, which is May 19th, 1986. Again, live from Madison Square Garden in New York City. Your announcers, our Gorilla Monsoon and Lord Alfred Hayes. Graham does not have attendance for this show. I'm guessing it's a sellout. It was a Monday night, mm-hmm. the usual Monday night show. So it sounded like a pretty hot crowd based on some of the matches. The other team, or the other half of the roster that night, was 3,000 miles away. They were at the Sports Arena in San Diego, California. But Graham does not have a card, so we don't know. Obviously, I'm sure Hogan was there since he's not here. But I'm sure that card was pretty solid. But most of the talent was actually here on this evening, so probably pretty thin over there. Maybe Jesse was there since he lived out there. I don't know. But
maybe Sexy Steve was there.
They were in San Diego. That is quite San Diego, Charlotte, North Carolina, his opponent. JR, the rest of the report.
What other, Hulk
give
Hogan,
us the roll call and other juicy tidbits.
Sure. Hulk Hogan, 147 days into his reign as world champion. 100 days even for Mr. Randy Savage as IC champ. 42 days as tag champs for the British Bulldogs. And that bitch, the Fabulous Moolah, 175 days into her reign as women's champion. We now turn to Mr. Jeff Jarvis. Just a few notes here from him. Stuff that's happened since our Saturday's main event. On the 5-3 episode of Championship Wrestling during an interview with Mean Gene, Ricky Steamboat mentioned that Randy Savage is IC champion and he may want to pursue that title down the road. So,
yes, he did.
A little foreshadowing. On the same episode, Roddy Piper was taking some time away and we get a new talk show debuting, and that is The Flower Shop with Adrian Adonis. And if you want to hear more about that, check out the Greatest WWE Wrestler Ever Pod Blast that Mr. Scott and Jason Greenhouse did, breaking down the case for Adrian. There's also a great written piece by our buddy Michael DeDamos, who did an awesome piece that has lots of linked footage in there and embedded clips all about Adonis as well. So plenty of Adonis fodder for your list as you work through things there. Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage also working their way towards a big WWF Championship match at the Boston Garden on 5/24, so that feud's still burning. And that's about it. So we head inside the Garden, Gorilla and Alfred in the booth for this month's show, like you mentioned. And we open stuff up with our old friend Lanny Poffo taking on our older friend Tiger Chung Lee. The king of the openers, Lanny Poffo, at it again. Poffo gets a warm welcome, reads a poem as always, and they open by trading some arm work with Poffo gaining control. We get the usual talk about wrestling barefoot as always, and Alfred mentions all the ankle problems you can get in the ring when you're doing that. Al also calls Lee slow upstairs as Poffo maintains control, continuing to work the arm. Lee catches Poffo with a knee to the gut, starts to go to work with some weak-looking strikes. Lee gets a nice stomach breaker and then starts to focus on the midsection. Poffo starts to punch his way back into things and shoves Lee into the ropes to buy some separation. We reset with a lockup that Poffo wins, followed by a flurry of strikes, but Lee comes back with a thrust to the throat. Al says you can slow Lee down, but you cannot stop him, and it's demoralizing, which I don't think anyone's ever probably said about him. Lee runs Poffo into the buckle and chops and knees away, but Poffo dodges a charge, and Lee hits the corner hard and crumples to the mat. Poffo punches away and gets a near fall and goes to a chin lock, but Lee fights out and goes back to the chops. Poffo tries for a somersault, but Lee ducks him and is able to stay on top. Lee chops Poffo right over the top rope into the floor. Poffo recovers, but Lee yanks him up into the ring. Poffo punches away as Gorilla says the ropes are very loose tonight. And Poffo shoots Lee hard into the corner and he flips up onto his head. Poffo keeps bringing the heat and gets a near fall, but Lee thrusts him down to cut him off. Lee chops Poffo back to the floor and then drags him back and slams him. Lee goes up top, but Poffo catches and slams him off. Poffo goes for a somersault leg drop, but Lee dodges him. Poffo recovers and leaps on Lee's shoulders and takes him off with a head scissors for the win. This is a fun little opener. I thought it had pretty good energy with an ebb and flow. Lee looked good for once. I thought better than he usually looks. Poffo sold nicely and used his usual array of offense. I thought this was a good enough start to the night at 1 star, which for us for the opener is pretty high. What do you think, Scott?
Yeah, I agree. I also gave it a star as well. Your official match time is 11:15. I got some decent length matches on this show. Again, Gorilla and Alfred, I always love watching them listen to them do matches. They're very laid back and they're very relaxed, and can tell a pretty good story. Although Alfred sometimes says some odd things, like you said. He said something about Chiger Chung Lee was going to do something, and Alfred was wondering if it was. Referring to what you were saying, JR, he either said that Tiger Chung Lee was doing something kind of off the cuff or something different, or he's just dumb. That's pretty much what it came down to, which is pretty funny. And that chop that I think the highlight of the match for me, that chop that Tiger Chung Lee gives Poffo, and he literally like clears the two ropes and smacks on the ground. That was actually pretty good selling. You mentioned it. He sold great through the whole match, but that was particularly good. He literally took this chop right in the chest and literally didn't touch the ropes. He kind of flew through the two middle ropes and then hit the deck. So that was a good move as well. And Alfred's just so funny sometimes when he does commentary. This is not the first time he said this, but I like when he calls moves supple. That was a supple back roll.
I feel like he doesn't know what it means, though.
Yeah, I don't think he knows what it means either. I think he just likes the way it sounds. But a good solid match. Again, solid opener. Landy's in a good groove. I've been watching these championship wrestlings, and he's been really good even in the squashes. He's been pretty good. And Tiger Chung Lee, who's also been in some squashes on championship wrestling, again, kind of upped his game. And this isn't a bad opener. At 11:15, it seemed to go faster than that. So, and that's a good thing, because we're going to have matches later on that felt longer than they actually were, and then were long anyway. But again, 1 star and pretty solid. What do you think, Kelly?
Yeah, I thought it was okay. Nothing spectacular, but yeah, like you've said, I mean, the openers, wow, we've had some horrible ones, and this definitely wasn't in that class. JR, you mentioned Poffo becoming like the king of the curtain jerkers, and he kind of has.
Oh, for sure.
But he's in good company because he's replaced Johnny Rods, who had that role for most of the 70s and early 80s. So it's nothing to be ashamed of. And Poffo got a good pop. He seems to get a good pop every time now. He was definitely over the whole Frisbee poem gimmick. It was kind of dull at first, but then the bump you mentioned, Scott, was awesome. That great bump through the ropes, and it sort of picked up from there. Lanny took another nice bump outside later, and I thought it was fine. I gave it 1 star as well. I'm waiting for more of like a breakout Lanny Poffo match, because I know he has it in him, where we get something that'll be, you know, 2, 2.5, maybe even 3, who knows. That's what I'm looking forward to later in 1986.
For sure, and he's definitely helped, you know, add to the overall depth of these cards by, you know, producing pretty good matches in the opening, you know, within the opening few. So it's been good. It's been good to watch Poffo, and he, you know, he continues to improve too as far as like confidence and aggression. Like match by match, that's improved every time we see him. So that's cool to see him improve like that.
Yeah, right. Definitely.
We head back to the ring for our next match, and that is Special Delivery Jones taking on Bret Hart. Interesting bout for Bret here, and I'm guessing this was definitely like a replacement, right? Does Graham have that called out? No, he doesn't. I assumed it was for Brian Blair, because later on we have the other half of these teams, and Hart facing Special Delivery. It's kind of a weird match at this point. So I assumed it was supposed to be Brian Blair here, and he didn't show up or whatever, had to cancel.
Maybe. It's funny, because in 1987, SD Jones actually replaces Brunzel for a match on the Killer Bees and actually wears Killer Bees trunks against Demolition. So maybe he was always the substitute Killer Bee.
The go-to. All right, so Hart going solo here against someone that's not a member of another team. SD, though, always a quality challenger. Hart's fully alone tonight. No Jimmy Hart either. We get some feeling out to start before they lock up, and then we get underway. Al says these types of matches teach self-discipline for the tag team workers, as they have to go it alone. Bret bails to reset things and comes back in, and the two trade some arm work. Gorilla gets on the ref's case for not paying attention as Brett releases the arm and hits an inverted atomic drop to rattle SD. Brett works over SD and grabs a reverse chin lock, but Gorilla calls it a chokehold. Al wonders what Brett's childhood was like, and Gorilla talks about Al's great career as well. SD works free but gets cut down by a back elbow. Brett goes back to the chin lock and SD escapes again, but Brett's able to maintain control. Brett dumps SD to the floor where he stalks around before climbing on the apron. Brett meets him with a punch, but SD fires right back until Brett yanks him hard inside. SD recovers and drops Brett with a left hook and then runs Brett into the buckles before leveling him with a headbutt. SD meanders through some offense but eats a boot on a hard charge. Brett follows with an elbow off the second rope for two, but SD recovers and kicks Brett low after an eye gouge. SD comes up empty on a falling headbutt, and Brett goes back to work with some punches. Al notes that Brett hasn't once looked for a tag or a manager and has stayed focused. SD shrugs off, getting his head run into the buckle, and fires up, chucking Brett across the ring. Brett begs off, but SD cracks him with a headbutt and follows with an atomic drop. He follows with a shoulder block, but Brett catches and drops him with a backbreaker on the charge for the win. I thought this started a little sluggish, but the last 2 minutes got pretty good. A nice win for Brett. I would rather see him against guys that can keep up with him, though. SD was a step behind him pretty much the whole way. So I went a star on this as well. Kind of a, you know, when you see a Brett match, you kind of hope for a little bit more. And I thought this was a little bit lacking, Kelly.
Yeah, it wasn't anything special. It was okay. Scott, you alluded to Hayes being a little off tonight or whatever. I think maybe he was dipping into the gin again, maybe.
he's that would surprise me.
All over the place. And at the beginning of this match, he says Hart is 22 or 23 years old, and he was off by about 6 years in that guess. I love the spot where Hart hit Jones with an inverted atomic drop and then spat on him, like in one fluid motion.
Yeah,
that was really good. Like Hart at this time was, you know, he was great even in 1986. He just had it and could do like really cool, unique things in each match. But yeah, saddled with SD, who was at the tail end of things here, the fans, they're kind of, you know, definitely not too hot on Hitman. He's been in a few matches that get boring chants, and this one has a boring chants as well. Yeah, I liked it more than the opener. Or I thought Hart really worked his ass off in this match, actually. And he made the crowd care for Jones's comeback at the end. That got some pretty good heat. And I gave it a star and a half.
Scott, give us your thoughts, and then I actually have a question about the Harts.
Indeed, sir. I actually agree with you, Kelly. I gave it a star and a half, too. I liked it a lot. I do agree with you, JR, that SD did seem a little a step behind. But it's SD, though. He always at least finds a way to kind of fit in and adapt as best he can. But he was, I mean, Brett's obviously younger and spryer. Looking at Graham's site, the last time, let's see, May 16th at the Cap Center, B. Brian Blair actually fought Brett. So I have a feeling this is probably a replacement, but he hasn't wrestled in a week or in a few days. So there's a good chance it is probably a replacement, but he didn't. It's not on here. But the backbreaker, I mean, that was a great exchange in the end. I liked Brett selling the inverted atomic drop, and then he gets the shoulder block, and then, you know, SD's not a tiny guy. SD probably weighs about 260. And Brett, I mean, snapped off that backbreaker pretty good and pretty fast for the pin. So I really loved the end. The end was really good. And it's pretty evident that they know somewhere down the line Brett's going to be a solo star. You could see it. Pretty evident. Because I don't think they would have trusted his partner with SD later on in the show. That would have been an utter mess. So I think it was good. I think it was good that Brett got SD. Obviously SD was probably again replacing Blair, which actually would have been a fantastic match. Your time was 10:15. So slightly shorter than the first match, but I liked it a lot. I really did. I enjoyed it immensely. And Brett is starting to, emerge, obviously, as a guy that they'll probably use, you know, 3-4 years down the line as a guy they could count on as a solo star. So I gave it a star and a half, Kelly. I agree with you. I thought it was pretty good.
What did you guys think of the direction of the Hart Foundation at this point, though? We haven't really seen them in much of a like sustained feud in any way. They haven't really been in the title picture, which is fine, but they had some stuff with the Bulldogs last year, and I guess a little bit with the Bees here, but I feel like they never seemed to have anything of any kind of hotness going on. Like, they're just kind of there. And, like, even at WrestleMania, they're just kind of in the Battle Royal. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you dig in the slow build for them, Kelly, or do you think by this point, a year in, we should be getting, you know, something a little more substantial from them?
I think they were, like, just a jobber to the stars tag team at this point. I remember Brett in his book wrote about, you know, the year before they got the tag belts, so 1986, that they lost pretty much every match they were in as a team. Like, so there wasn't too much plan for them at this time. I mean, they were a solid team. They made, I mean, their role was to make the other teams, the teams they were pushing, look great. And they did that really well. So, you know, some team, you know, sometimes you just, that's your role. You got to be the jobber to the stars, jobbers to the stars. So, yeah, they were definitely not really going anywhere as far as being pushed up the cards at this time. That's for sure.
What do you think, Scott?
Well, what I think, JR, is I feel like none of the tag teams other than our champions and our number one contenders in the main event are in anything. I don't think any of the tag teams are in feuds right now. Yeah. So I think that they're all kind of just treading water, waiting for this feud to finish. So it's not bumming me out. If it gives an opportunity for Brett to wrestle single matches and realize the guy's an incredible talent, then that's fine with me. And that, you know, Anvil was the blunt force object of the team, and that's fine. And I think the rest of the tag team division is kind of treading water. And I think, you know, I think Vince and the company's still trying to cherry pick some talent from the other promotions, from the other territories, to kind of keep filling up that tag division. Because really, after the Hart Foundation, who's the next real heel? The Dream Team, the Hart Foundation, and I guess Sheik and Volkov. Yeah. I guess, but even they've been wrestling a lot of singles.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's funny because you always hear about what era this was for tag wrestling, and I feel like we have nothing. Like, it's pretty much hasn't been much going on. I mean, maybe by 87, I guess it turns up. Yeah.
Yeah, we're kind of right on the cusp. Sorry, Scott. Like, right on the cusp of it.
Yeah,
really
yeah.
Turning up.
No, I agree with you, Kelly. I think I agree, JR, and I think that comes a little later. I mean, yes, you're right. Everyone says it's the era of the tag teams. But, I mean, if you look, and I was watching a lot of 86 NWA, and, I mean, Jesus, other than the Midnights, Rock and Roll Express, and I suppose the Koloffs, really were no tag teams in NWA either. So, you know, it's interesting. That tag wrestling at this point is always kind of has always been kind of struggling to find its foothold on cards, other than the title feud. So obviously, the Dream Team is the top dogs at the moment, and we'll go from there. But I think the Harts, I think we're talking about the Harts because they are so good.
No, I mean, I'm just curious. It's a team that's been around for a year and hasn't done anything. So I was just, I was just curious.
It's a viable question because you look at the grand scheme of things, and the tag division in general is pretty flat, other than Dream Team and the Bulldogs.
Yeah.
I think we see that change over the next like 4 months. I think as we continue documenting our house shows and obviously the TV, I think you'll see tag teams start to galvanize a little bit. Right. But yeah, well, I agree. We are kind of in a dearth right now in the tag division.
Okay. Well, so we'll track it as we go, and well, it'll be fun to see how it grows as we go along. So, all right. Next up is our old friend CV Afi back at it against Hercules. Another guy, which puts this match on paper, maybe one of the worst we've seen on paper so far, like ever. Like Hercules and CV Afi, given their track records here at MSG. To date, Afi doesn't even get an entrance anymore. He's introduced first, completely in the jobber slot. Herc looks pretty pumped up. His gorilla says he looks like a psycho case. Blassie's with Herc as usual, as Al says the referees have tightened up the ropes between matches because they were too loose before. Al says Blassie can negate any speed advantage Afi might have. I think he is way overestimating the speed of CV Afi. Gorilla also says Afi has lightning speed, which is, I mean, just fucking absurd. Herc uses his power early and works the arm as Gorilla wonders what kind of cut Blassie's taking from him. Afi backflips out of the hold and lands a quick flurry to send Herc to the floor to gather his thoughts. Herc comes back in and grabs a side headlock as Blassie comes over and yells at Gorilla. Afi breaks free and unleashes arm drags and drop kicks until Hurt catches him with a really nasty back suplex. Nice spot there. Blasty jabs his cane to the lower back of Afi, and Hurt keeps clubbing away before going to a chin lock. Afi eventually gets to his feet, but ate a big leaping clothesline from Hurt for a near fall. Hurt pounced and goes back to the chin lock. Afi works free and gets a sunset flip for two, but Hurt clobbers him to break the pin and went back to the chin lock again. Afi comes out of the hold to get an atomic drop and nearly collapses during the hold, trying it. Afi punches away, gets dropped on his head, and Hurt clubs him in the neck. Hurt goes to shove Afi to the floor, but Afi puts on the brakes, and Hurt goes flying out instead. Afi goes up top, and out of fucking nowhere, goes flying up to Hercules with a high cross body to the floor, to a huge pop, and the crowd, like, Alfred is, like, shocked. He's like, oh my god! You know, he's, like, going crazy. The crowd is all into this now. Hercules comes back in and gets slammed. Afi hits a leaping headbutt for two and heads up top, hits a high cross body, but Herc rolls through and hooks the tights for the win and some boos. And guys, where the fuck did this thing come from? Both guys worked really hard out there. You know, and even though the chin locks are too much, like, I thought they pieced it together and had a pretty fun match. Herc has been super aggressive. It's improved his matches. Afi had a bit more in the tank, even with his soft, you know, dog shit strikes that he uses. The crossbody to the floor is wild and completely out of nowhere, and that made it great. And the crowd is, like, bought in. As soon as he did that, they got so hot into the finish. I wish Afi broke that out, like, 4 months ago. He might have gotten over. I went a star and a half on this. The best match by far for Afi that we've seen, and it was a good showing for Hercules, too. I really enjoyed this one, probably because I had expectations of duds dancing in my mind, and it turned me around. What'd you think, Scott?
Yeah, I was – when I – you had watched this before I did, so today when I was watching and I was putting my my grades in, and I saw you put star and a half before I came up, I'm like, the fuck was he smoking? I looked at the two guys and I'm like, oh. And then I looked at our runtime, which is 13:07, oh, yeah. And I'm like, oh my god, I want to jump out the window. But it ended up actually not being that bad. Maybe it's because, and I'm curious what you think too, Kel. Maybe C.V. Afi finally realized, you know what? Just let me wrestle.
No, I don't.
All right,
think
so. Stop no. Using, you know, I don't think it's that and all that.
I don't think he's a good wrestler. I think he just figured it out on this one night. I think he just. I think it was just a magical night for them, which is a star and a half. But I just don't think I don't think he was, like, giving demands to let him wrestle instead of the dog and pony show. I mean, he's had a few matches now without that stuff. That's just my opinion.
Well, I'm not saying it was demanding. I'm not saying demanding it, but I think maybe he just wanted to have a nice match where he's the guy and then he's facing Herc and he was relaxed, and I don't know. I'm throwing stuff against the wall, seeing what sticks, because he didn't have anything. The last, like, five matches we've watched of him, nothing. And against a guy who isn't exactly Bret Hart, I mean, he actually put on something pretty good. So I was pretty impressed. I thought it was a solid match, better than I thought it would. And it actually makes this a pretty decent show so far. I gave it a star and a half, and good for C.V. Afi, and good for Hercules. And I love the banter with Gorilla and Freddie Blassie. I love, what are you doing here, Fred? What are you doing here, Fred? But just like you, I had zero expectations going into this match, and I felt pretty good knowing that it actually turned out better than we anticipated. So I also gave it a star and a half. Kel?
Yeah, no, I mean, like JR, I was prepared to go dud. I was prepared maybe even to dip into the negative ratings for this match for the first time. And watching this match, you know, in the context of watching all the other C.V. Afi matches, makes it much more interesting. And so this actually makes watching all these shitty matches worth it, because you get to see this story, because, you know, for this one match, it finally kind of all, you know, comes together for C.V. Afi, finally. But it's tragic because it's too late.
Way too late.
They've already decided that they're not going to push him anymore, and this was his actual first pinfall loss. So it's really, like, an interesting story that we've seen. You know, he came out, they positioned him as the next Superfly. That was a total disaster, huge bomb. He was botching moves left, right, and center.
Gassed, all his subsequent, like, 4 minutes.
Yeah, gassed. Exactly. Like, everything was just a mess, and now here he is. He doesn't botch any moves, or at least none that I noted. He could do his leapfrog spot finally. And then, yeah, he had the huge crossbody from the top rope to the outside, which nobody was doing. That was like pure out of like Japan at the time or in Mexico or something. Lord Al loses his shit. The crowd loses his shit. And suddenly I was like, oh, wow, I don't hate CVAFI anymore. I mean, that was an amazing spot. And where was this when he needed it, when he was actually getting pushed? It's so sad because it's over for him. He's not going to win another match other than maybe against some job guys on TV. He's not going to beat anyone of note. He's going to be jobbing on all the MSG shows probably going forward. And, you know, it's just so sad. And this was a decent little match. I went 1.5 stars.
Which may as well be 5 for them. I mean, that's...
Exactly. Yeah. And like, Scott, I saw your ratings beforehand, before watching the match, and I saw 1.5 stars. I thought, oh, no. Yeah, that must be a typo. I think he meant 0.5 star, maybe. How could it be 1.5 stars?
Which still would have been more than we anticipated out of him. So.
Yeah, exactly. So, but, yeah, it's interesting, to chronicle the sad descent of CVAFI. This is an interesting chapter in that whole story.
Yeah, it is. It's when he did that dive to the... I mean, I almost jumped out of my chair when he did that. I was like, oh, my God, where the hell has this been? It's like we've kind of been wanting him to do something, you know? And he finally did it. And Al's reaction is gold. You know, I actually rewound it just to watch it again because Al just like popped huge. Like even, you know, you knew he was shocked because he's been watching this scrub this whole time too. And he's like, whoa, you know, where the hell did that come from? And of all to do it, you know, a fucking Hercules of all people, you know, it's not like he was in there with Brad or something. And I mean, he's out there working his ass off with Hercules, who has again gotten more aggressive and really figured it out and pieced it together. So it was a cool moment for those two guys to, you know, so you just throw them out there and whatever, see what happens. And hey, work. It's like when you pull a pitcher off the scrap heap, you know, to go out there and just give you 3 or 4 good innings because your starter got hurt and he goes out there and throws like 6 shutout. You know, it's like you don't expect it to ever happen and they figure it out for one night and throw it together. So it was cool. It was kind of a cool moment. Speaking of pitchers, we head to the crowd. We see Yankees, Dave Rigetti and Dave Winfield out in the crowd. More from them later. And that brings us back to our old rivalry match, and that is Nikolai Volkoff, Corporal Kirchner, back at it again here at MSG. Nikolai gets the whole anthem in. Kirchner gets his entrance with his music this month. Like, what do you guys think is the reasoning that they decide sometimes to have the music and some don't? Because I thought maybe he was, like, cooked because that last time we saw him, he had no theme. But now it's back again. So do you think is he getting pushed again, or what's going on?
I don't know. Maybe the tape was misplaced or something.
Yeah, I don't think it really matters. I think Kirchner's on the same path. I just think they decided, what the hell, we're at the Garden to play some music.
Yeah, this is weird.
I don't think it really changed the stat as much at all, to be honest with you.
The last Garden match, he had nothing, so I thought maybe he was getting the CV treatment, you know, with nothing going on.
CV
treatment.
all right. Appy.
Right? He's, oh, I got my music. All right, the crowd's revved up for Kircher and the flag, but again, he hasn't delivered on any of this hype yet. Al says Kircher is up, as D'Amato would say, and will never come down until he puts Nikolai down. So another drug reference, it seemed, I thought, basically saying he's high and won't come down off his high. Kircher tries to punch away, but Nikolai kicks him off. Kircher comes right back with a flurry of strikes and hits him with a back elbow. Kircher gets a small package for 2 and then hammers away before hitting an awkward dropkick. Nikolai takes over and Blassie jabs Kircher with his cane in between clubbing offense. Nikolai works the corporal over with some plodding offense before grabbing a bear hug. The crowd is super hot here, chanting USA and rallying Kirchner, who breaks the hold but can't take advantage. Nikolai drills the lower back and goes back to the bear hug again. Corporal escapes and gets a roll up for 2, but Nikolai maintains control and drops into a bone arrow submission and then releases, allowing Blassie to whack Kirchner in the throat with a cane. Nikolai kicks the corporal down, but Kirchner comes back with an atomic drop and then drops to a knee to the hamstring before awkwardly grabbing a Boston Crab. Al's all over Kirchner for wasting time during his comeback. Nikolai powers out of the hold in a pin cover and then dodges a drop kick before stomping hard on the abdomen. Nikolai takes Kirchner over with a nice butterfly suplex and a gut wrench suplex for 2 counts. Kirchner comes back with a sunset flip for 2 and then works the knee until Nikolai bails. The USA chants ring out again as Nikolai rolls inside after some stalling. Nikolai catches him with a roundhouse kick to the gut and then shoots him to the corner. Nikolai misses a charge and Kirchner gets 2. Corporal tries for a fireman's carry slam, but Nikolai hooks the top rope and forces Kirchner to put him down. And then Kirchner lands a back elbow for 2, but runs into a double knee left. And Nikolai goes to some weird pin cover where he's standing and he grabs the ropes and steals the win. Just really stupid looking and awkward. He like rolls him over and like stands with his shoulders pinned down and just leans on the ropes. Alan Gorilla doesn't rip the referee for the whole mess for having, like, basically staring at Nikolai, standing there holding the ropes and still counts. Kircher batters Nikolai after the bell to a big pop. What a shit finish. I actually thought it was shaping up to be a decent match. Nikolai's work on the back was fine, and Kircher showed some good fire, and the crowd was into it. But it really got bogged down at the end, and that finish was just terrible, and it went longer than needed to as well. Kircher was really cooked at this point, by the way, losing to Nikolai again in a televised match. I went a half star here. It was trending towards a star until that finish. So, Kelly, what do you think of the match, and what do you think of these constant drug references about Kirchner that Alfred likes to make?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess, I mean, like there's no it's no secret that Kirchner was a fan of the drugs. So I don't know. I mean, and the bloom was off the rose, as I mentioned last time. He just wasn't being pushed anymore. The company had soured on him. So who knows what was going on? And he probably rubbed a lot of people the wrong way backstage, because he's another guy that gets kind of a rep as being kind of a dick. So it wouldn't surprise me if Hayes was just, you know, going into business for himself, so to speak. I'm so sick of this feud, though. Ugh. It's just way past its expiration date. It's moldy as hell. Did we need to see a rematch of WrestleMania 2? It's just, no. But the crowd was hot. I'll give him that. It's funny, because I think when Kirchner wrestled the Sheik the last time around, the crowd didn't seem to give a shit about that. But I guess Russia was the hotter heel country at the time, maybe. I don't know. I'm just not a fan of Kirchner at all. I don't think he's very creative as a worker. Just basic stuff for him. And this match just kept going and going and going.
It was.
I had it at a half star too.
What's up with that pin?
Yeah, so I know, it was like ridiculously obvious that he was cheating. Yeah, and the ref. I mean, the refs in MSG in general are pretty bad, but tonight they hit new levels of being horrible. Yeah, this was a nothing match.
I gave it a half star as well, and you know what it reminded me of? Looking ahead, almost 30 years, but it kind of, or 20 years, but it reminds me of when Edge was faux fucking Beulah at at One Night Stand 05 or One Night Stand 06, whatever it was. It was very suggestive, if not, yes, completely awkward. Kirchner's done. He's done. I gotta say, I almost felt like Nikolai was actually out-wrestling him in this match, and that says volumes.
He has in every match. I mean, even that Saturday's main event match, the peace match, or whatever the fuck it was. I mean, even that one, remember, Nikolai was out working him on the mat, and he has. I mean, he's you could kind of argue Nikolai's been kind of a dick to Kirchner. He's ate him up in a lot of these matches. Like, I mean, he's sold a little bit for him, but Nikolai's selling is so shit that it doesn't look good. But he's actually outworked him on the mat quite a bit.
Which tells you, like you said, Kelly, that that Kirchner's reputation is preceding him, and they're probably putting him through the ringer right now, because he's just fucking terrible, absolutely atrocious. And if we don't see him again, I'll be perfectly fine. But I know he sticks around for a little bit anyway. I gave it a half star. Your official time is JR. You probably saw it. Kelly, how long do you think it was?
It had to be over 12 minutes. I would say 12.
Close, 11 and a half.
Yeah.
11 and a half. And it felt like 41 and a half. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not giving Nikolai all the credit in the world for being a work rate marvel, but he definitely there was definitely some backstage business going on. And Kirchner clearly, they said, you're no Sergeant Slaughter. And they pretty much took him to task on that. So,
yeah, I think that was decided about a year ago. But
yeah, I know. Yeah, anyway, sure, figured that out pretty quickly. Yeah, so there you go. I give it a half star as well. It's if I never see another Nikolai Kirchner match, I'll be perfectly happy. So,
all right, we go backstage.
We now go backstage. Yes, Chair.
Gorilla Monsoon chatting with Randy Savage and Miss Elizabeth. Backstage, as Macho says, Gorilla talks big and bad, but he sits at ringside to watch instead of getting in the ring. He calls Bruno Sammartino a has-been and stupid. He says he can't tie his shoes, but Gorilla says Bruno's not retired. Gorilla asks Liz why she stays with Savage, and Macho forces her to say it's because he's champion. Good little character work there by Mach. Gorilla's then joined by Dave Winfield and Dave Righetti. They're on an off day and came down to see what some of the heroes are up to, see what's going on. Righetti says he wants to see Ron Darling get out there. Topical 80s baseball humor. King Kong Bundy shows up, shakes their hands, and says Dave can't get a fastball by him. Bobby Heenan then shows up and cracks some jokes, and then some random guy comes in and says he's Dave and Dave's manager and issues a challenge to anyone in the AL East on their behalf. this is pretty cool. It was relevant, local to New York. Who was that guy? Was he like their agent? It was like some guy just jumped in the scene and started yelling. It was so out of place. Any ideas?
Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was another Yankee, maybe, but I don't know.
I didn't recognize him either, but obviously the Yankees were off that day, as we'll get into the pop culture report later, because they were actually there. I'll have to look at that again. I have to look at the clip again then.
It might have just been like their agent or something, or he literally might have been their manager, you know? Like, I don't know who it was, or it could have been a buddy. I mean, who knows? But anyway, it was random. Gorilla, then we get our last interview, talks to Ricky Steamboat about what happened back at Saturday's Main Event, and Ricky is wearing a Saturday's Main Event hat. He says that serves as a reminder each and every day for him, and he got a haircut so he can look at the knot on his head every day as well. He said his first mistake was to turn his back on Jake Roberts, but he won't make a second mistake yet, despite what the snake is claiming. All right, back to the ring for one of our favorite feuds here on the PlayStation Podcast. Tito Santana challenging Randy Savage for the Intercontinental title, but we have a special twist this month, as Bruno Sammartino is our guest referee with a nice treat for us. Of course, this feud is still hot and burning on. Savage and Liz enter to a mix of cheers and boos, looking like superstars as always. Bruno gets a huge pop, and Tito gets a hot reaction as well. The crowd is buzzing as everyone settles in and postures. We get a lockup off the bell, and Bruno sets the tone right away by forcing a break in the ropes. Savage gets in Bruno's face to a pop, but everything calms down. Savage bails to the floor and regroups, but before coming in and re-engaging, Savage then takes Tito down, and Tito spins right out of it, and Savage bails again, using Liz as a barricade. Both men return to a loud Tito chant breaking out. Tito works the arm as Savage escapes and heads to the apron. Tito cracks him with an elbow, knocking the champ to the floor. Savage heads back in and demands a DQ, but Bruno shuts that down. Savage continues to dodge Tito and goes right at the arm, taking Tito down. Tito comes back with an arm drag, leading to some quick back and forth by both men, ending in a Bruno forced break. Tito gets a roll-up, but Bruno never counts, so Savage just wiggles free and slides outside. Savage quickly scales the top rope and clobbers Tito in the neck with a double axe, nearly clipping Bruno on the way down. Savage goes to work with a hard knee to the back and a snapmare for a slow two count, with Bruno really taking his time on these counts. Savage grabs a chin lock and keeps Tito grounded as the challenger works free. Savage cradles Tito to a pin, and again Bruno just kind of saunters over and gets down, and Tito kicks out at a one count. Savage goes back to the chin lock, but Tito punches free until Savage cuts him off and chucks him hard to the floor. Savage meets him with a double axe off the top and works him over on the floor before getting a near fall with a knee drop. Tito punches his way back into things, leading to a collision that wipes out both guys. Savage comes off the top, but Tito catches him with a right hand, throws him inside. Tito goes out and hammers away and then shoves Savage back in the ring. Tito kicks away and spikes Savage to the mat. As the crowd is all fired up, Tito takes Savage over with a backdrop and grabs the leg, but Savage squirms into the ropes. Tito eats a hard knee on a charge, but recovers the small package for two. The two trade hands, but Tito wins the exchange and levels Savage with a nice forearm shot. Tito goes to the figure four, but Savage blocks it with an eye poke. Savage gets a near fall and punches away as the crowd is chanting for Tito again. Tito blocks an atomic drop and gets the figure four in the center of the ring, and everything looks lost for Savage. We're going to have a new champion, nothing he can do. But then Adrian Adonis, dressed in drag, levels Bruno from behind and beats the shit out of Tito. Bruno recovers and beats up Adrian to a huge pop. Savage decks Bruno from behind, and then Adrian cracks him with a clothesline. That beating continues until Tito grabs a chair and makes a save. A red-hot match with a very organic build throughout, and then a molten finishing sequence. I like the post-match brawl as well. The crowd was into it. Tito doing whatever he could to grab the legs while Savage keeps trying to escape is a nice through line for the whole feud. Bruno kind of sucked as the ref, but the post-match makes up for it. Tremendous chemistry as always, and yet again, Savage sneaks out as champ with Tito getting screwed yet again. And let me ask you this, guy, Scott, and you can, and Kelly, you can weave this into your comments if you want, but do you think Bruno would have been better served to just be like Tito's corner man here? I thought his refereeing was pretty shoddy, and like, you can argue, oh, he was kind of like screw with Savage with the slow counts, but Savage doesn't show any, like, anger or aggravation with Bruno, so I don't think that was the story. I think Bruno just was slow and kind of sucked at it. So I thought it actively hurt the match, and I think this could have been better maybe if Bruno was just at ringside as the enforcer, either the enforcer ref or like Santana's backup, and Adonis knocks him out on the floor and then comes in and costs the pin. Because I liked Adonis interfering. I liked all that stuff. I just thought Bruno was the ref kind of – it was just noticeable how – kind of awkward he was, but I mean it didn't hurt the match. The match was great. I went 4 stars on it. So what do you think, Scott?
The match was utterly fantastic. Your total runtime 13:25. Yeah, I gave it 3.5. You said 4. Are you changing it?
I went 4. Like
you put 3.5. So
okay,
on the thing. I just want to make sure.
Four.
Then I concur. I'm going to go 3.5. I think Bruno's reffing kind of knocks it down a bit, but I was fine having him as a referee. I had no problem with it. Remember, Savage is the champion, so there's really nothing that Bruno could do. So I think if you want to think about it logically, Savage really had nothing to worry about because he's the one with the belt, not Tito. So having said that, I thought his refereeing wasn't atrocious. The key points for me, the ending of the match kind of bummed me out as much as I love Adonis to death. I like that Savage was wearing Hogan's reverse colors instead of yellow tights with red knee pads. He wore the red tights with yellow knee pads.
So wait, why did the finish bum you out? I'm curious.
I was kind of hoping there would be some kind of drama with Bruno having to pin Savage. I'm sorry, for Bruno to have to count Savage for the victory. I think it would have been just having a boring run-in, I think, kind of... I mean, it wasn't atrocious, but I was expecting using Bruno for something a little bit more cerebral in the end. And I think it would have been neat if, say, Tito cheated and then Savage hit the elbow. Savage cheated, then hit his elbow, and then Bruno wouldn't count it or would count really slow.
Yeah,
I think there would have been some neat – and maybe Adonis comes out and kind of bitches about it, and then we lead to that. I don't know. I was expecting a little more than just a simple run-in.
I like the run-in because every match we've seen with these guys, right, Savage always ekes out the win somehow. So, the first time Tito gets on the Figueroa, he goes to the eyes. Then he hits it with the bell and gets his DQ'd. He keeps finding ways just when it all looks dire. And now he's really fucking stuck. He is trapped in the middle of the ring. He has a referee that's not going to let him just slap him and call us a DQ. He's got a ref that's out that has his number. Tito's got it locked on. He's got nowhere to go. This is it. He is done. And then Adrian Adonis, this asshole out of nowhere, comes in and ends it. I thought it was a really cool DQ, and I liked that he wasn't lingering out there. It just comes out of nowhere, because you're like, how is he going to escape this time? And me even knowing that Tito Santana doesn't win the IC title at this point, was wondering, what are they going to do to get Savage out of this? And then I kind of jumped up when Adonis came in. So I don't know. I liked the DQ here. I liked the way they did it. Did you like it, Kelly?
Yeah, I thought it was fine because it – you had to end the Savage-Santana feud eventually, right? And it protected Tito. He still, he took a pinfall loss in the previous match, but that was after a ref bump and Savage had the tights. So this ends that feud. Tito still is protected. He's fine getting out of it. And then it transitions now to a tag team program with the four men. So, yeah, I thought the booking was... pretty much perfect in that regard.
Yeah, and I thought that's why it was important, too, to have Tito stay strong, for them to continue the tag program. Like you said, he's eaten two pins already by Savage. So the title match and then the ref bump one. So, no, I mean, I was okay with it. I thought the finish worked. And it helped that it was such an awesome match. But did you have any more comments, Scott?
The match was just fantastic. I also like the fact that I thought that the reason they were getting Adonis involved was maybe they were siphoning, because as nuclear as this heat is, and kudos to both Savage and Tito for making this feud much longer, much better than I remember it being. Maybe they were using Adonis to kind of siphon Tito off Savage, and Tito would feud with Adonis, and then Savage can move on to somebody else. That was the only other reason. That was the one reason why I thought the run in worked, because it would give Tito somebody fresh to work with, and Savage could focus on somebody else. Otherwise, the other match was amazing. 3.5 stars. If we did quarters, I would have given it 3.75 because they were just that good. And, you know, Savage Tito, I think they should have their own collection on the network. They should just put all the Savage Tito matches one after the other. That's how damn good they are. So, yeah, check it out. 3.5 stars. Bordering 3.75, almost 4 for me. And match of the night, obviously, so far.
Yeah. Yeah, I really liked it, too. I mean, these guys are awesome. This is a like an under-discussed match in the series. I'd seen it before, but only once in years ago. It's not one that gets mentioned a lot, the one with Bruno as the referee. But, yeah, watching the whole story, this followed logically from the previous match because you had the referee get knocked down and was groggy in the previous match. And then was obviously like at fault at the end, counting the pin. So you needed, you know, the need for a different referee, one that wouldn't get knocked down was needed. So, and Bruno being in New York and all that, so you could add that, make it a draw. So, yeah, it totally made sense for Bruno to be the special guest referee. Him counting the pins, I mean, I was, yeah, chuckling. You know, it was kind of funny because it kind of made Bruno look kind of slow and old that he couldn't get down and count the pins too fast. But I mean, if you look at it in a kayfabe way, you could say, well, you know, Bruno's not a referee. Right. He's not experienced as a ref. He maybe misjudged how easy it would be to just come in and referee a match. And it's not that easy to get down and count pins fast, obviously.
Very slow. One or two of them, he literally just kind of slowly walked over, got on a knee. And so, I mean, it was like 6 seconds, you know?
Yeah. I think part of it was he was kind of like sticking it to Savage too, because Savage was getting in his face and being a dick to him. So I think that was part of it too. Yeah, rabid crowd pre-match. You know, this was a feud that the MSG faithful loved, and they kept going back to it. You know, this would be counting what's coming ahead, 5 straight shows with Savage and Santana together. That's pretty impressive, actually. In the history of MSG, I don't think you could say two guys wrestled each other 5 straight times. I don't think so. Yeah, huge buzz in the air. This is Godfather Bruno at this point. You know, the old man Bruno, who's still really great. And yeah, this, and I liked the story that they were telling where, because Bruno was the ref, you know, the two wrestlers respected him more than a regular ref. So they weren't going to try the shenanigans. They weren't going to do a wild brawl. So there was more wrestling, you know. I thought that was a nice touch that they respected Bruno as a referee and they weren't going to, you know, do anything that would anger him. Although Savage was, yeah, being a dick to him, like I said. And Santana had a great fired up comeback, as he usually does. This was checking all the boxes. The attempts at the figure four being thwarted. I love that because it built and built when he finally gets it on. Huge pop. And then, yeah, I was lost in this match and I'd forgotten how it ended. So Adonis coming out kind of surprised me. And it's, oh, okay, now I remember the ending.
And on TV, I think it was one of the prime times I was watching, he actually had called out Bruno or whatever. They talked about it like before this. So,
yes.
So he had, you know, if you had watched the TV or whatever at the time or were into it, it wasn't, because like to me watching this, because I saw this first before that, I was like, why is Adonis involved here? You know, but knowing now that he had like kind of called out Bruno on TV and stuff, it made sense for why he got involved.
Yeah, that was great because they planted the seed. And then when he comes out another, yeah, I mean, because you're going to piss off the crowd in a way that wanted Teeter to regain the title, but then you give them this finish, which builds into something else. Bruno gets in on it. His shirt gets ripped off. He still has the bow tie on, though, which was kind of funny. Stomping on Adonis's wig. I love that. Bruno is all kinds of fired up at the end. I love this feud, how it evolves into now a tag team program. It's one of my favorite things from this era. I went 3.5 stars, like Scott. A notch below the no DQ match from the previous month for me. That had
It better than that one.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just, you know, they're very close. Yeah. Like, and then the previous month's match to the no DQ is also really, really good. I wasn't on the show with you guys that night, but I think I would have probably gave that one 4 stars. So, like, Savage has just been on an insane run, going from the Hogan feud now into the Tito feud. At MSG, just 3.5-star, 4-star matches every time out. Santana's always great. And yeah, and then you add Bruno to the mix and Adonis. Yeah, this, yeah, what's not to love about this whole thing?
Not much more to say there, guys. So why don't we head to our next match, and that is Tony Atlas taking on King Kong Bundy. Interesting match here for Bundy as he looks for something to do post-Mania. A good buzz in the arena for Bundy and Heenan as they jaw with the crowd. Al says Atlas can beat the best in the world on the right day, and Bundy shoves Atlas off a lockup, and Gorilla wonders if Tony can press slam him. Bundy shoves Atlas back again and then grabs a side headlock. Bundy plants Atlas with a shoulder block, but Tony comes back with a Thez press for two, shocking everyone. Bundy clubs away, but Atlas lands a headbutt to stagger Bundy. Gorilla says Heenan believes that he has a team that can't be slammed in Bundy and Stud. Atlas works the arm, but Bundy just clotheslines him down to break the hold and kicks away. Bundy slams Atlas and grabs a chin lock, but Atlas powers through his feet and elbows free. Bundy shoves Atlas down but comes up empty on a splash. Tony works him over the headbutt and punches and gets his knee up on an avalanche attempt. Atlas clocks Bundy with a headbutt off the middle rope, but Bundy blocks a splash with his knees and drops an elbow for the win. Surprisingly feisty little match. You can tell Bundy's huge push is kind of dead, but he's sold a lot more here than usual, which I think points to that he's not being protected as much. Atlas had some nice fire and gave it a go right until Bundy was just too much at the end. I thought it was kind of fun. I went with the star for this one. Again, more than I would have expected out of this pairing, but I thought, in a way, it was another match, maybe like the third or fourth one we've seen tonight, that was surprising because I just was not expecting Atlas to come out with the energy and fire he did and bring the fight to Bundy as much as he did. So it was kind of cool that they had Bundy get rocked a little bit here. So yeah, one star. What'd you think, Kelly?
That's what I went with too, one star. And yeah, I totally agree with you, JR, about Atlas being seemingly much more motivated than in previous encounters. I mean, to be fair, he was wrestling, I think, Les Thornton.
Right.
Who else was he going through? A bunch of kind of scrubby guys. So now he's with a guy who just came off WrestleMania 2 main event, so he better be fucking a bit more motivated than before. And I think Atlas at the time was kind of being told, you know, you're walking on pretty thin ice, buddy. Time to step up your game. Still, it wasn't anything super spectacular here. It makes Bundy still look pretty strong because Atlas was a respected guy in the territory from the fans' point of view. He didn't lose very many matches even at this point in time. So a win by Bundy over Atlas is good in the fans' eyes. The pin was funny because, well, first Gorilla rips Atlas for his poor splashing techniques where he landed on Bundy's knees, and then of course Atlas kicks out right at three, the typical, you know, yeah, I'm doing the job, but you know, I'm not happy with it and I'm going to show you that I actually kicked out right at the end.
Right, guys
used to do that all the time back in those days. So yeah, one star for me.
I don't know then, maybe Atlas needs sepsis like the Sweeter, who was the other one that used to kick out at three and an eighth. I give this match a half star. I still, motivated or not, Tony Atlas still sucks. Your running time was way too long, 8:04. It would have been better if this was like 3:04. I would have been much happier with Bundy coming out, kind of reestablishing himself and just killing Atlas in record time. I don't think we needed 8 minutes of chin locks and fumbling around with these two. So I think Bundy needed a win bigger, and nobody cares about Tony Atlas anymore. So I would have been happy with a match that was about half as long and maybe even given Tito and Savage a minute or two more. But I would have been happy with a Bundy squash. This match did nothing for me. It wasn't a dud, but I really can't give it much more than a half star. Tony Atlas is another one that I've lost my patience with in terms of anything in the ring. And I was kind of hoping for a Bundy squash to kind of reestablish him after, you know, doing the right thing as a good heel and laying down in the cage in L.A. And now, you know, let him kind of get some action back. So
I think it's the opposite. He's like destroyed guys for a year. It's kind of his time now to give other guys a little bit. He's not losing. I mean, he gave like 2 minutes of offense. I don't know. I think he's okay.
I have no problem with him giving it back to guys, but not to Tony Atlas because he sucks. So I don't mind him giving it back to guys who are going to actually use it and be motivated down the line instead of, you know, JTTSs, which is pretty much what Tony Atlas is at this point. So I agree with you, JR, in theory, but not in execution with this match. because Tony Atlas is a stiff. So I'm perfectly happy going to somebody else. If you wanted to do that, I would have put a better guy in the spot than him.
So you're not going to answer the cell phone if Tony calls?
No. He'll probably, it's under his mattress with his rolls of quarters. you know, paying the bills with IOUs. All right. Why don't we take a break? We've got, four matches left. What do you think? Kelly, I'll ask you first. What do you think so far?
It's been actually, there's been no duds yet, so that's always a good sign. True. Santana and Savage was a great match. It's been better than a lot of MSG shows have started, that's for sure. Mm.
JR, pretty thumbs up so far? In the middle, slightly higher? What do you think?
No, I think it's been pretty good. Like I said, it's better than a lot of the other shows we've seen. Usually the first half is where it lags, but I thought, nothing's been terrible, and we've had some nice surprises. I thought every match almost has had like a little present in it. So on a card that looked awful on paper with some of these matchups has actually, delivered a pretty enjoyable watch. And when you get a 4-star match that's going to anchor things and another two matches of potential high quality on paper to come, like going into the second half right now, you're feeling pretty good when you look at what's to come still without, if you didn't know.
Hmm. Okay. Well, why don't we take a break? We've got four matches coming up, including our main event, the World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Championships on the line. But first, a breather in the home office because
all new break. Check it out. It's not in the way that you came back to me. It's not in the way that your love set me free. It's not in the way you look or the things that you say that you do. For the life, love isn't always on time. Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. Don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com. And we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. all of these shows, plus others available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hey, this is Scott Hudson, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast with Scott and Justin.
All right, Nation, we are back talking the May 1986 Madison Square Garden House Show. Of course, joining us as always, the third man in the club, Kelly Nelson. And it is time, of course, for our pop culture corner. And, you know, Scott, I love hearing about movies and sports and music. And even though wrestling is the greatest love of all, I do like hearing about these other topics here when it comes to the pop culture corner. So why don't you spin us around the world of music, movies, and sports from this week. May of 1986.
I shall, JR. And of course, you hear it in the background. Our girl Whitney, who has been a mainstay here in the Billboard Top 100. Now, of course, this being Monday, this came out 2 days before the 17th. Greatest Love of All is your number one song. So Whitney getting herself started on her epic run to pop greatness. At number two, The West End Girls by Pet Shop Boys. Number three, Little Van Halen, Why Can't This Be Love. A lot of familiar songs. They just moved up the charts. Number four, another diva making her way up, and that is Janet Jackson with What Have You Done For Me Lately. Madonna, Live to Tell at number five. Your Love by The Outfield at six. The Saturday Night's Main Event credits song, Take Me Home by Phil Collins at seven. Bad Boy by the Miami Sound Machine, of course, it had Gloria Estefan, but she was just part of the band at that point. At number nine, If You Leave by Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark, or as they have it spelled, Orchestral Manuvoirs in the Dark.
Did Sutton write it?
Manuvoirs. Well, if it was If You Leave, it would have L-E-V-V-E.
Yes.
If You Lev. And at number 10, Robert Palmer, Addicted to Love at number 10. So there's your top 10.
So that dropped pretty precipitously, huh, the last week? Wasn't that number one last week?
I believe it was, and over the last couple of weeks, it dropped. It dropped two spots. Last week, it was eight.
Oh, okay.
So it probably dropped a lot the week before.
So was it number one a couple weeks ago? I could have sworn we just had it at number one.
I believe it was
number
one.
Well, these are a couple weeks apart. That's right.
Yeah, it was number one. Let me
May
go back.
3rd. It was May 3rd the week. So I'm thinking weeks that we record, obviously, like an idiot. But
yeah,
it was 2 weeks prior.
Well, let me go back to May 10th, which we normally don't do. But last week, actually, it dropped one spot from one to two. So in the span of a week, it dropped eight spots from two to ten.
Okay.
So it fell far. So there you go. So there's your Billboard Top 10. It came out 2 days before on Saturday the 17th. Okay. Only one movie came out Friday, JR, but it's a big one. We finally fell on a weekend where an epic 80s movie came out. And we'll talk a pretty good amount about it. It came out on Monday the 16th. It made, you ready for this? $179,800,601.
Jesus. Some of these we talk about was like $9 million to make. That's pretty crazy.
The budget was $15 million, but it made $179 million. And Corporal Kirshner said it backstage, JR. He felt the need to take speed. No. no. Of course I'm talking about Top Gun. One of the most epic movies of the 80s. Tom Cruise, Val Kilmer, Anthony
Edwards.
Stealing
my gimmick? Hang on. United States Naval Aviator Pete Maverick Mitchell and his radar intercept officer Nick Goose Bradshaw fly the F-14A Tomcat aboard the USS Enterprise. They, with Maverick's wingman Cougar and his RIO Merlin, intercept fictional, whatever, over the Indian Ocean. During the engagement, Maverick flies his Tomcat parallel to one of the MIGs.
Fictional whatevers. Fictional orchestrars.
I was going to try and write what the fuck this is. Say what this is. It inverts his craft in order to give the other pilot the finger, a feat that already adds to his wild reputation. Cougar's almost taken out by a hostile aircraft and is too shaken to land despite being low on fuel. In defiance of orders, Maverick aborts his landing and escorts Cougar back to the carrier. Cougar gives up his wings, citing his newborn child that he's never seen. Despite his dislike for Maverick's recklessness, Stinger sends him and Goose, his top crew, to attend Top Gun school. And we go on from there with, yes, Tom Cruise as Pete Maverick Mitchell, Kelly McGillis as Charlotte Charlie Blackwood, Val Kilmer, Anthony Edwards, Tom Skerritt, Michael Ironside, Barry Tubb, Clarence Gilliard Jr., Meg Ryan, Duke Stroud, Linda Ray Jurgens, Rick Rossovich, John Stockwell, and on and on. And, of course, known for what song, Kelly? The famous one from this one?
Danger Zone.
And? The other song?
I'm blanking right now.
Scott?
Berlin.
Yes.
Every breath, not every breath you take. Take My Breath Away.
Yes.
Oh, yes, right, of course.
Take My Breath Away. Yep. Good, so good call on Danger Zone. Yeah, mm-hmm. I thought you were going to say The Righteous Brothers. You lost that love and feeling.
Well, that's the other one I was thinking. The third big song from that was from that movie, of course, was made big. And that's the one that gets a lot of run when it comes to weddings still to this day. Like, I've been at least at one wedding where we had to sing that to the bride. So it's I think it's a popular song for that kind of setting.
Yes, it is. It is indeed. But yeah, one of the best, the great nicknames, the great call signs on that show, in that movie. You had Maverick, you had Goose, Iceman, Slider, Hollywood, Wolfman, Wizard, Charlie, Merlin, Viper.
Speaking of Merlin, I wish that came back. Such a good show.
I think I've only watched it with you. I think I watched it with you and the wifey. I think it's the only time I've ever watched it.
I know Chad was a big fan. I think he's the only other one.
I think he was. But great movie. So Top Gun came out, one of the most epic movies of the 80s, came out Friday, May 16th. Mm. Sports, very light tonight in sports. Major League Baseball, as you could see on this day, there were only three games. Of course, JR, both our teams were off. Obviously, the Yankees were off if there was time for them to be at this show. So the Yankees were off. The Mets were off as well. But your Blue Jays, Mr. Nelson, were not. And they lost to the Cleveland Indians at Exhibition Stadium 6-4.
Bums.
And Dave Steeb took the loss. And guess what, Mr. Nelson? Dave Steeb was 0-6.
Oh, really?
Point. Yep.
Huh.
Phil Niekro got the win.
Yeah, I don't know what his record finished up with at the year, but he turned it around. And he would throw a no-hitter against the Cleveland Indians eventually.
I believe 4 years later. I think
I believe still the only no-hitter in Blue Jays history. Embarrassing.
Robust history with the Blue Jays.
Yes.
Oh, come on.
I wonder if you guys trick, because obviously the year before, 85, Niekro was on the Yankees because he won his 300th game at the Exhibition Stadium against the Blue Jays. So I wonder if you guys just let him go and he signed as a free agent, or you traded him. I don't remember. Anyway. There were only three games, and that was one of them. And the Yankees and Mets were both off. The standings in the AL East, the Red Sox with a one-game lead over the Yankees. In the West, the Angels have a game-and-a-half lead over Oakland and Texas. The Mets, with the best record in baseball, lead Montreal by 3. And in the West, a virtual tie between the Astros and the Giants. No games during the NBA playoffs. All games were off that day, as well as the NHL playoffs. But they were in the Stanley Cup Finals. And after two games, Mr. Nelson, the Wales Conference champion Canadiens and the Campbell Conference champion Calgary Flames were tied at a game apiece through two. So this was the travel day for your Flames, and they went, 4 hours probably, 5 hours, I guess, from Montreal to Calgary?
Yeah, about 5 hours, yeah.
5 hours. So 5 hours. And the next night, tomorrow night, the 20th, would be game three at the Saddle Dome. So.
Campbell Conference. I just watched Merlin all day. All right, we head back to the ring for our next match, and this is a continuation of a big feud, and that is Ricky Steamboat taking on Jake Roberts. Jake quickly thrown in the deep end of the into a heavy feud against a top guy that all kicked off on our Science Man event that we reviewed last week, Scott. With a great angle, put a ton of heat on the feud. Steamboat is focused and angry as he power walks to the ring with his new haircut, as we learned about earlier. Steamboat doesn't let Jake get in the ring and slides out and hammers away before shoving Snake inside. Jake catches Steamer coming in with a knee lift and buries a boot to the gut. Steamer blocks a DDT, hammers away, dropping Jake with a side suplex, punching him some more until the referee pulls him off, pissing off Alan Gorilla. Jake bails outside and gets caught coming back in. Jake comes back with a hard right hand and mows down Steamer with a clothesline. As he says, Steamboat has recovered from the concussion but still has lumps on his head. Jake keeps in control and tosses Steamboat onto the apron. Steamboat comes back in with a sunset flip, but Jake punches him to block it and then hits an inverted atomic drop. Jake keeps punching and kicking away and then slams Steamboat before going over to his sack. He starts to untie it, but stops and goes for a knee lift, which Steamboat dodges and sends Jake flying. Steamboat goes with a pair of reverse neck breakers, but catches Jake's knees on a splash off the middle rope. Jake shoves Steamboat to the floor and then slides out and tries for DDT, but Steamboat shoves him back into the edge of the ring and then into the barricade. Steamboat shoves Jake inside and heads up top and comes off with a chop to the head. Jake is bleeding as Steamboat works the cut with chops, but the referee again gets involved, pissing off Steamboat, who shoves him out of the way. Steamboat mounts Jake in the corner and hammers away to a big pop, but the referee pulls him back down. Jake tries for DDT, but Steamboat slips free and hammers away. Jake recovers and clubs Steamboat in the corner, but now the referee gets in his face, and Jake shoves him back. Steamboat shoves Jake backward, and he wipes out the referee, leading to the bell and a double DQ as Steamboat snaps and pounds away at the bloody cut until some wrestlers come out and break things up. Jake attacks Steamboat as they hold him back, and then more wrestlers come out and break things up again to finally end the fight. This is really good with some good heat, a lot of hatred. Steamboat showed tremendous fire and aggression. The finish was good, too, with the bloody brawl. The referee was super annoying, as always. I wish they figured out a better way to do the schmoz. I'm fine with it because it's the first match. Like, the double DQ is cool and the blood. I just wish they got to it in a you know, more organic way versus what they tried to do. But this obviously is going to be a red-hot feud going forward. I went 3 stars on this first installment between these two guys. What'd you think, Scott?
I actually gave it 3.5. I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. I like seeing, and I've said this before in previous shows involving Steamer, I like when he's super aggressive. I feel like we don't see that enough on TV, and we get to see more of this aggression on the house show circuit. So I love watching Steamboat house show matches because I think we see a side of him that you don't get to see on a national scale because he's supposed to be the happy-go-lucky babyface. But when you piss him off, he's even more entertaining. So I loved this match because of the fact that he just went that extra mile to really add to the drama, of the brawling. But wow, these referees are atrocious. You know, it's funny, Kelly, you mentioned it earlier. This is like the place for these house shows, and the referees just fucking suck. Like every month. I don't think Gorilla just does it for you know, cheap pops. I think he legitimately thinks these referees are terrible.
Yeah. They are terrible. Yeah. They're
fucking atrocious. Like he's you know, Steamboat hits him with an open handed thing and he pushes him back. And the guy looked new. He looked like a bad referee we hadn't seen before. But I mean, it's just not good. I mean, these referees are abysmal. The referee kind of ruined it at the end. Kind of just let them brawl out. But I had a blast. I loved seeing Steamboat at this level of aggression that you don't see on national TV that you seem to only see in the local circuit. So I was thrilled with it. Excellent match, 3.5 stars. I might have even gone so far as maybe graded it higher than Tito Savage. That's how much I love this match. And again, I think it's all Steam. I mean, Jake's fantastic. But to get Steamer to add that extra aggression to the match, both guys succeeded, in my opinion. So 3.5. Go.
I really like this one too. I mean, I love both guys. one note from the pop culture report, though. Dave Thebe finished 7-12 in 1986.
Who cares?
So he ended up he ended up going seven and six the rest of the year.
Yeah. Definitely not one of his best years. And his ERA was really high too. I love hearing Steamboat's original entrance music, Sirius by the Alan Parsons Project, because you don't get it on the network versions. That's always edited out. Yeah. So that's cool.
Like they use for WrestleMania 3.
It just doesn't drum fit. It's one of the better themes of the 80s, actually, for a wrestler, I always thought. Great brawl. I don't think I'd ever seen this match before. It didn't ring a bell at all. Great brawl to start. You know, the crowd's red hot, so the whole angle on Saturday Night's main event got over. I mean, both these guys are over anyways, but Roberts now was in sort of the upper echelon almost of heels in just a few months in the territory. The referee was, hideous. I think it was actually the ref from the Tito Savage no DQ match from the previous month, the one who had the towel. Remember, I think it was the same guy.
Oh, yeah, right.
I think it was. He's totally incompetent. Like, if you didn't know any better, you'd think they were doing like a heel turn angle with the referee.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, because it totally seemed like he was going heel. So I don't know what his deal was. But I hate him. I've got to find out his name. We've got to put a name to the face. Good to see Jake get busted open for a blood feud type match. It made sense for the DQ finish, but it was really sloppy at the end and how it ended with the DQ. But I mean, this is the first match, like you said, JR, it's got to go. You aren't going to have anything decisive right away. And the post-match brawl was actually really good too. I love it when the wrestlers have to come out and break it up. Tiger Chung Lee is always shirtless in blue jeans, by the way, when he breaks up post-match brawls. Look out for it. Great. Like, the brawl went up the aisle. Really good heat. Steamboat's great at the blood feud angles, blood feuds. And Roberts would be too. So, yeah, the ref was really annoying. I was, you know... I didn't want that to affect my grade so much, so I had to kind of contemplate this one, but I did end up going 3 stars on it. Mm. Even though the ref stuff was actually as distracting as a bad ref could be, I would think. Pretty good match, really good match.
I agree, the ref was terrible. Not new though.
Brutal, absolutely brutal.
All right, for some reason, Fink brings Sammy Hagar to the ring to say hello to the fans. He gets some mixed boos and cheers, and then he leaves. It wasn't?
No, that was like some weird, like, fake. I don't know if it was a...
Oh, was it meant to be like an imposter or something?
I don't know what kind of rib it was.
Yeah, I was going to say that didn't look like Sammy
Hagar. It was not Sammy Hagar.
Half paying attention. I just heard him say
it. I have no clue what the fuck it was. I have no idea. I don't even remember that until I changed screens today at work and looked, and I said, the fuck is this guy? Looks like Lee Singer or Cheap Trick. Look at Robin Zander. It didn't even look like Sammy. I have no idea why they did that.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know if Fink fucked up. I don't know. Uh-huh. It made no sense.
Maybe it was just, you know, they'd eventually do like the Bill Clinton imposters or whatever, so maybe it was supposed to be like that, trying to trick everyone. They fooled me. All right, Danny Spivey taking on Paul Christie. Christie back for another go-round. We saw him a couple months ago against Spivey, who's pushing budding star of Dimmed quite a bit. Christie offers a handshake and then pulls back before stooging around with his exaggerated heel TV soap opera villain mannerisms. Spivey grabs a side headlock as Gorilla talks about Arnold Scollin for some reason. We get a crisscross that Spivey ends with a stomp to the head and goes to a headlock. Spivey maintains control with strikes and a slam before dropping an elbow for two. Spivey catches Christie with a back elbow and drops the bulldog for the win. A true pure squash. Christie got absolutely no offense in. And maybe, just maybe, Spivey's push is back on track, Kelly. He gets a strong win here.
Oh boy.
And a dud. Anything quick on this squash?
No, this was a sigh match when you saw the names come up on the screen. Thankfully, though, it was short. I still gave it a dud, though.
Yeah.
Christie. Oh, God. Oh, man. No, it's just Spivey's a guy. Like, all the clones of bigger stars. I just can't stand them. I can't stand Spivey. Well, clones isn't the right word because they're so inferior clones to the stars. Because yeah, Spivey, Affy, Kirshner, ugh, all of them I can't stand. Yeah, and there was boring chance in this one, and it wasn't even a very long match. So that says something to who was involved. Yeah, Dudsville for me.
Yeah, I gave it a dud as well. But is that so? That means, Kelly, you'll never want to visit Hickory Hill or Hickory Twig or Knob Hickory, wherever the fuck he's from. I don't know. I kind of like the you know, old school 50s Roy Rogers haircut that Paul Christie has. And I think it's pretty suave. But I mean, Spivey's very clumsy in the ring still. Mm-hmm. But as we'll see later, I don't know if his solo push is on. But I mean, it's fine. It served its purpose. Your official time was 3:11. The Jake Sneemer match was 7:36. Just to let you know, 3:11 for this match, and it was just a nice effective squash, which I guess Spivey needed. And who wants to give Paul Christie any offense anyway? So, so there we go. Easy dud for me as well.
Yes, 3:11 indeed. Amber was the color of their energy. Jim Neidhart takes on Jim Brunzell at our next match. We referenced this earlier as one half of the Bees takes on one half of the Hart Foundation. Feud between the Harts and Bees rolling on with a good little singles match. Makes me wonder if Blair missed the show and SD stepped in earlier like we talked about. Alfred rambles through ranking these guys in their respective teams and Gorilla puts over Brunzell's dropkick. We get some feeling out as Anvil uses the hair to control the headlock. Gorilla notes that Jimmy Hart's still MIA tonight as Anvil keeps hold of the head. Brunzell wiggles free and grabs the legs until Anvil slithers free to the floor. Anvil comes in and clubs away, slugging Brunzell down. Brunzell yanks him outside and runs him to the post. Brunzell works the arm back inside, grabbing a hammerlock, as Al talks about Brett's win earlier. Anvil breaks free, but Brunzell gets a crossbody block for two and then goes back to the arm. We get some talk about the WrestleMania 2 Battle Royal as the arm work continues. The crowd starts getting a bit restless here as the two are circling around before Anvil is able to catch a charging Brunzell and drop him with an inverted atomic drop. Anvil chokes and claws away and then slugs him to the floor before dragging him back up and choking him across the top rope. Brunzell crawls back in and gets a small package for two, but Anvil regains control with a chin lock. Gorilla thinks Anvil's getting frustrated, and if Brunzell can keep his cool, he can win this one. Brunzell keeps trying to power free, but Anvil just grinds holds on the mat, and Brunzell fights out, but we go right to the back as Al says Anvil's blown himself up and gotten arm weary from locking this hold on for so long. Yes, much too long. Brunzell finally breaks free and works the leg, which Al says is a better attack. Brunzell punishes the leg and hooks a figure four, but Gorilla criticizes the application. Anvil forces the break and overpowers Brunzell to a two count. Both men get up and clothesline each other. Brunzell tries for a slam, but Anvil falls on him for two. Brunzell recovers and buries Anvil with a dropkick, but Anvil gets his foot on the rope as the bell rings for the draw. I mean, technically fine, I guess. I can appreciate all the headlocks and limb work, but at this point of the show, it was just a grind to sit through. Like, this probably should have been, like, maybe the second match, you know? It made Brett and SD here. Needed a way hotter stretch into the draw, and it never got there. Like, usually when these matches hit the bell for the Broadway,
yeah,
you get, like, that hot sequence leading up to it, but that just never came in this one. No. Never got to the next gear. So I went a star and a half because technically it was fine. It was a super fucking boring and not a match we needed to go. Was it a true draw? Yeah. I mean, well, Graham has 20. I don't know how long it actually was, but
1850. I did it today. 1855. Yeah. So it was just a little, just short, just short.
That's like a not getting any that time back in your life match right there. That one.
Yeah.
Fucking totally. Never ending. Scott, what'd you think?
I gave it a half star and I mean, listen, I know we always talk about how, you know, this is the late 80s. It's a very different beast than now. And you don't talk about work rate and in-ring as much, you know, as a fan of the 80s. But who the hell sits in the back and picks which match is a fucking draw? And who would have thought that this would have been a great idea for a fucking draw? I mean, really. Never give Jim Neidhart anything longer than 6 minutes unless he's
with
Brett.
We've seen it more often. I feel like we've seen a bunch of long Neidhart matches. I would have just done Brett and Brunzell into the draw and have Anvil beat SD earlier in the night. Even if like they no-showed and you had to switch it up. Like, isn't that a better situation? That Brett and Brunzell go to the draw? Probably would have been much more enjoyable.
I mean, it sucked. And I know they love Brunzell's dropkick, and that's like his big thing, and he actually hits the drop kick at some point. And, yeah, I mean, I couldn't even say it serves its purpose to bore the shit out of us. Is that what the purpose was? It was dreadful. It was absolutely dreadful. And, Brunzel probably could be fine in a 20-minute match if he had a better guy than this pile of shit.
Yeah, this wasn't Brunzel. I mean, I don't even know if it was Anvil. Like, it was even kind of a blah match for Anvil, who's actually had some decent stuff. It just, whatever. It just never clicked. It just never got going.
Nah, not at all. Not at all. It's a slog. And, again, not quite a dud, but could have been a dud if it wasn't far away from being a dud. Kel?
Fuck it, I'm going dud. technically, yeah. I mean, there wasn't botches, and yeah, it was wrestled technically fine, I suppose. But it was so boring. I couldn't believe how long the arm bars went on for, and you know, the crowd really just shit all over this match too. There was loud, boring chants, a lot of like whistles and stuff. Just, you know, Finkel, when he was announcing this, should have just said, "Okay, guys or fans, it's time to go. Buy food, buy merchandise. This match is not meant to be watched by anybody or enjoyed, because it was 20 minutes of totally nothing. And like you said, JR, yeah, it didn't build to like a dramatic climax before the bell or anything. They were just still meandering around doing nothing. It's you know, possibly the worst example of like a meaningless time limit draw where like neither man even, you know, attempted anything to do anything entertaining.
Like, it was just, I mean, would the fans have cared if this went like 8 minutes and they got home 10 minutes earlier? Like,
exactly.
Like, would they have felt screwed?
Yeah, that's why I think it was like a attempt to sell more merch. It's like, drag this out. Let's get more money out of this crowd. Because there was no other reason that I can think of for this match to go 20.
It absolutely was not.
Just a piece of trash. I'm a fan of Night Art. I'm a fan of Brunzel. But it was just, God, they phoned it in so bad in this one. Yeah, dud.
Okay. All right, let's not waste any more time then. Let's get to Fink, who's in the ring running the next card down for Saturday, June 14th. Gorilla then chats with the Dream Team and Johnny V. They talk about putting their big title rematch here tonight, crediting Johnny, the master of the fine print. Gorilla tries to stir shit up about Beefcake not saving Hammer at WrestleMania 2, but it does not work. Beefcake calls Albano the Cheeseburger King, and V promises the titles will come back to the Dream Team tonight, because indeed we are getting the Dream Team taking on the British Bulldogs, a big tag team title rematch main event from WrestleMania 2. This has been a rocking feud throughout 86, and this really could be the Dream Team's last shot at the straps for a while. We'll see. The Bulldogs get a nice pop and are with Albano tonight. Albano comes over and talks to Gorilla as we get some feeling out and posturing with Davey and Beefcake getting us started. Davey grabs the arm to start, but Beefcake gets to the ropes and slides outside to confer with Johnny. Back inside, Davey grabs a side headlock and then dodges a slam and dodges a charge and slams Brutus to the mat. Dynamite tags in and works the arm as well, and then tags Beefcake, but Beefcake powers Davey to the corner, tags in Hammer, who then comes off the top with a clubbing blow to the head. Hammer follows with a nice shoulder breaker for two, and then lands some strikes, but Davey catches him with a clothesline on a charge. Dynamite comes back in with a headbutt, gets a near fall, but Hammer comes back with chops and tags in Beefcake. They land a double-team strike, and Hammer tags right back in and lands some shots before Beefer comes in, leading to a flurry of double-teams and quick tags and strikes. We get an inadvertent bell as Al explains who John Bull is, the version of Uncle Sam in Britain, Great Britain. Beefcake comes in and gets a backbreaker for two and gets criticized for the weak cover. Hammer comes back in and clubs away some more, but Dynamite punches and headbutts three. Hammer cuts off a tag attempt and goes for the figure four, but Dynamite blocks it. Beefcake comes in, hits a big vertical suplex that rattles Beefer as well, allowing Dynamite to recover and tag. Davey cleans house on both guys and drops Beefcake with a power slam, but Hammer makes a save. All four men with Davey brawl, with Davey getting a small package that Hammer breaks up with a knee to the head. Hammer hoists Davey up for a suplex and then just drops him, but Davey escapes and makes a tag. Dynamite lands a series of headbutts and strikes and gets a close near fall. He gets another near fall and a clothesline, but Hammer shoves him to the corner where he eats a Beefcake knee. Hammer grabs the figure four, but Davey comes in and busts up the hold to a nice pop. Hammer then slams Dynamite, but misses an elbow drop before landing a second one for a three count, but the referee realized that Johnny V was hooking the leg, so he waves off the pin. Dynamite pops up and rolls Hammer up for the win. I did not like that finish. It was just really confusing. Like, what is their obsession with these fucking stupid, confusing finishes? Like, I know they want to protect guys, but just pin Beefcake or whatever. Like, who cares? Like, is anyone going to think Greg Valentine's more illegitimate if he loses this match? The whole thing was confusing, and it's... I like this card a lot, but a lot of the finishes here left shit to be desired. Like, the finishes were not good tonight. Again, very confusing. The match was good and stiff, but not up to the usual standard. I think it's time for both these teams to mix it up elsewhere. I think this feud could be put to bed. We've kind of seen it play out enough.
Yeah.
I think we're kind of good with it for now. And I think it's been a good one for everyone involved. Time has come. A little disappointing looking at their canon, but a good match. I went actually just 2.5 on this one, Kelly.
Yeah, that's what I went with, too. Not a good position on the card for this match, I don't think. The crowd was clearly tired at this point, so there wasn't a ton of heat. I mean, I guess they did eventually get into it, but it felt kind of sluggish at the beginning. I liked the House of Fire by Davey Boy, and then followed by House of Fire by Dynamite. It was going good for most of it. And then, yeah, the finish kind of came out of nowhere, and it was confusing. Like, you totally couldn't tell that Johnny V had held the leg on the first, like, in real time.
Right.
It wasn't, it wasn't obvious.
Especially being there live. Like, how are those people friggin' figuring it out?
They still had some gas in the tank for this feud, so they didn't want to blow it off. And I've mentioned before how, like, blowing off a feud was something they just, it was only done after they'd milked every last cent out of it. They just kept going and going and would do screw jobs and all kinds of things to prolong things. 2.5 stars. There's definitely a lot better matches between these two teams out there. And it just didn't really hit me in any way, this one.
I actually gave it 3 stars. I liked it. I think the Bulldogs are on fire right now. I love watching Hammer wrestle, but I agree with you, JR, that these endings are just getting ludicrous. Now, all this overthinking to make things fancy pants, and it's ruining things. I mean, just why is Beefcake getting protected? I mean, what the fuck is that all about? I mean, you know, although Johnny V holding the foot was definitely more covert than Nikolai pretty much staring at the ref while he's holding the fucking, while he's holding the ropes. So I got to give Johnny Giver credit because the camera angle almost, they do a very good job. And then the whole point was that Johnny was supposed to get caught and he ended up holding the foot too long to give the ref a chance to when he leaned up to see it. So I think that's the funny part, but I like the match. I thought it was good. I think this feud is over. I think, you know, Dream Team got their rematch. Now I think it's time for the Bulldogs to get a fresh heel opponent, which kind of goes back, JR, to what we talked about earlier, where some of these heels, like the Hart Foundation, some of these other teams now need to kind of get in line. And I think the Bulldogs now need to start spreading out and getting some other opponents. So, I thought it was a good match. I give it 3 stars. It just worked really hard, but the ending was brutal, and I don't see why it would have stayed the main event. I had no problem. I mean, I don't know. What do you think, Kelly? Would you put Tito Savage last?
I don't know. It just seemed like the crowd was spent. Maybe no match really. Well, I guess one of the either Tito and Savage or Roberts and Steamboat, because they were the blood feuds.
I think that Anvil draw killed them regardless of what was next.
Yeah, it probably did. I don't think it would have mattered. I agree with you. I don't think it would have mattered.
That was brutal.
I think whatever they put last would have bit having to follow that piece of shit. So, yeah, you're probably right on that. All right. And there is your card, which means, JR,
awards time. Now? Let's
awards.
Do it.
Awards.
All right. Match of the night. I think we're all in agreement, Savage Santana.
Neidhart and Brunson. No. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you meant longest match of the night. No, Tito Savage was awesome. Although the main event and Jake Steamer come really close. All three matches were really, really good. But I'll give the itch to Tito and Savage.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. Our Cousin Junior award for the worst match of the night. I didn't dog some of those matches like you guys did, so I just went with Christy Spivey because it was the dud. You guys have a different feeling? You guys seem down on some of those matches that I was okay with. So did you have anything different in this spot?
That draw was atrocious.
that draw was out. And I would actually, for me, even though I didn't give it a dud, I would have no problem putting Bundy and fucking Tony Atlas there. But I mean, I'm fine with the Christie Spivey match, but that draw was just was terrible. I don't know if, Kel, if you think any differently. I mean, I'm fine leaving Christie Spivey there, but I could be persuaded to put the draw there because that was terrible.
Yeah, the draw for me, the fact that it was legitimately almost 20 minutes of nothing, it has to be the worst match. I would never, ever want anybody to experience that match, and I never want to experience it again. It was just so bad.
I mean, I'm fine going with that, even though I gave it the star and a half, because, again, it was technically fine. Like, there was nothing per se wrong with it. It was just so fucking boring at the worst possible time of the show. So I'm fine giving it to that. Yeah. It was tone deaf, if nothing else. MVP of the night, I went with Randy Savage as usual when he's on these shows. I thought he was fantastic as always.
Yeah, he was tremendous. I concur.
Yep, me too.
Oh, the old Uncle Elmer, the worst work of the night. And I went with Corporal Kirchner on this one. I thought he looked fucking terrible. I think he made Nikolai look like Randy Savage in that match. I mean, he is just a thud and a dud across the board. His pushes hit the shitter, and he just looked, you know, up, or whatever you want to say. He was just out of it on this night. I think he's been a complete waste, Scott.
Yeah, I mean, I give an honorable mention to Tony Atlas, but I'll go with Kirchner. He's baked. He's baked. Literally and figuratively.
Yes, I will make that number three for Kirshner.
All right, the best moment of the night. And by the way, Kelly, while you're gone, we renamed the Gator Wolf to Uncle Elmer. So
that yes. Is
now the worst.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that decision at all.
Very good. The best moment for me, I had the post-match of Santana Savage with the Bruno beatdown and Adonis and all that stuff. I thought that was the hottest part of the night.
Yeah, it was, definitely. Although the end of Jake and Steamer was pretty good, too.
It was.
Steamer just still beating on him and trying to break all the heels and faces come in to break him up. I don't know now. I don't know. That was pretty good. I mean, Bruno and Adonis, and I mean, that they're awesome. I'll go with that, but definitely very close second place to the post Savage or Steamer and Jake.
Yeah, I feel about the same way. It's close between the two post matches, but I'll go with Bruno being fired up. I'm a Bruno guy, and it was pretty good.
All right, the Junior Miss Universe Award. I went with a guy it's named after, and that's Tony Atlas on this evening.
Yeah, no doubt.
I went with the Bulldogs. Yeah, I mean, Atlas, of course, is always in consideration. I mean, the award's named after him. Bulldogs, I get maybe because it was the last match of the night and it was the freshest in my mind. But yeah, I remember distinctly like noting that they were jacked as all hell as they were at the time. So yeah, I'll go with them.
All right, and finally, the overall grade, guys. I actually like this show quite a bit. I thought it was one of the better house shows we've seen so far. Savage Tito, I thought was great. Jake Steamboat, lots of fun. The Bulldogs Dream Team, a fine main event. I don't know. I didn't have a problem with some of the shit matches that you guys had, so I didn't really have anything besides the squash of the Spivey match as a dud. I thought Gorilla and Alfred were entertaining enough. The referee shit was annoying, but I thought there was enough here to keep this afloat, and I thought we had three very good matches on top. So I went, and the Offie things popped the hell out of me. So I went 6.5 on this house show, Kelly.
I went with five. The two big matches were really good, and those are ones that people should see for sure. I think the back end of the card just killed me dead, like it did the crowd. I just by the end of it, I was just we've talked about the draw a lot, and that one just killed me. So there was the usual crappy matches on the undercard. I don't know. I mean, I'm not gonna change. I'm gonna stick with five. I think I've had a few lower than that, so it's definitely not the worst I've seen, and I've had a few higher. It's about in the middle for me on the MSG shows.
This is my highest grade for a house show, tied with April of 85.
Oh wow,
which I had as a 6.5 as well. Everything else has been below. So, what'd you have, Scott?
Oh, I gave the one in January an 8, but I this is not an 8. I'm going to give this a 6. The Tito match, Tito Savage was awesome. Steamer Jake was awesome. The main event I loved, but that 20-minute draw is just not good. And then, again, I hate to beat a dead horse, but Tony Atlas is just terrible. So, I mean, it's a balance, but I'll go above average because the three matches were fantastic and carried it. But the main event, I think you guys would both like a lot more if that piece of trash match before it was not there. Yeah, I do think that 20 minute draw ruined the main event. So I'll give it a 6. I think it was a good show. I liked it.
All right, that's it for us here this week. Next week for us here in the States is 4th of July, which falls on Tuesday, meaning Scott and I have festivities on Monday. We are planning, though, to do the June 86 house show at some point next week, so keep an eye out on the Place to Be network for that. It will be up at some point, and it is a doozy, so we'll be talking about that one. Different feelings from tonight for sure. In the meantime, be sure to check out all of our material when it comes to the Greatest WWE Wrestler Ever Project. There's tons of podcasts, pod blasts, and written articles coming out each and every day to help you build your list. Check out the newest Letters from Center Stage that dropped last Friday as well. 10 of those puppies are already in the book, which is pretty crazy. Seems like we just started. Scott, what do you got on tap? Any main event action coming up?
Main event will be next week, and we will have a combination of the Great Balls of Fire preview as well as a mid-year report. We're going to grade all of wrestling. We'll talk more about it next week, but we will grade TNA and WWE and some of the indies and see how the half year has been in pro wrestling. So we'll combo that with a preview of Great Balls of Fire. So it should be a packed show next week.
We have a preview of the McGinn wedding as well.
Oh, no, we'll have that might be a pod blast.
Yeah.
For about two and a half minutes.
I was saying, that's what the post-wedding night's going to
be. Yeah, that's what the
pod blast.
Yes.
Oh, God. Kelly, anything you got coming up you want to talk about?
Not coming up, but about a week ago, a little over a week ago, Johnny, Pete, and myself got 3/4 of the Titans back together. And we put out a show on the Bruno Sammartino collection that's on the network. It's on my new show, Mount Olympus. And it's going to be basically whenever I feel like getting guys together and doing a show podcast. So nothing regular. I subtitled it the Quarterly Wrestling Review. So, you know, 4 a year, maybe 5. We'll see. Definitely I have some ideas for future shows. But yeah, look for it every couple months. We had a blast doing the Bruno one. It was
awesome.
Blast. Yes, a pod blast. A 3-hour pod blast, this one. That's a big blast. And the matches, if you guys haven't checked it out on the network, there's a ton of great matches, great Bruno matches on there. They really did a great job putting together that collection. So everyone should check that out, and everyone should check out Mount Olympus. Yes,
and all of that is meant to help you prepare your list. So check it all out, placenation.com, each and every day. Social media, facebook.com/placetobenation, Twitter, place2benation, Instagram, Tumblr, placenation.com/Amazon for all your shopping. And, of course, download our free Vintage Vault ebooks via the right-hand link on our side. We're dominating that, was it Barnes & Noble's list or whatever it is, Scott? Still on top of that thing?
Yes, the Barnes & Noble and Yahoo ebook lists. We are indeed. Keep it up.
Yeah,
keep clicking.
Thank you. It makes it worth watching all those 94 and 95 Raws. So
yes,
anyway,
absolutely.
We're out. Everyone have a happy and healthy holiday weekend. We'll be back at some point over the next week talking June 86 MSG and of course gearing up for that big McGinn Pod Blast Raw. We'll be coming at you with some news from that event. So everyone take care. Standing still. Heaven knows.
choose twice. I won't.